Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk about the 2021 Ravens defensive line and our positional reviews as we continue these. Here to join me today for that broadcast is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing, my friend?
Good, Ken. Glad to be back. Glad to be talking Ravens.
Always a lot of fun. I hope we don't let this conversation go too long like we always do. I'm just kidding, of course. Goes as long as it needs to go. Defensive line, an interesting position for the Ravens in both 2021 and looking forward. But let's start by looking backwards at the season they had. Obviously, a season interrupted for some of the Monstars. Derek Wolfe, in particular, sat out. Did he play at all? Did he play snap? He didn't play at all this year. Yeah. And came, tried to make it off IR, might have been twice even. He tried to make it off IR, but was not able to do it and eventually put aside for the entire season. And it's a shame. It's the first year of a three-year deal. Ravens have not been having great luck with their long-term contracts recently.
Yeah, well, when everybody gets hurt all the time, the luck is bad across the board. Derek Wolfe's an interesting guy. And you know, I think it's interesting to look back at this defensive line because, you know, they ended up the Ravens ended the year being the league leader in terms of rushing defense. Now, that's yardage, and you know, that doesn't necessarily mean what it used to mean in terms of kind of the variation among the league. But I think that's a testament to what these guys did on the defensive line and the scheme and the approach and what the Ravens are trying to do, with this group of personnel.
Yeah, it's certainly something the Ravens have traditionally been good at. And in the last few years, they've actually made some concessions on the defensive line in order to, have a better pass defense. They've built more back to front. They've always had, good safeties, good corners on this team. It's something we've come to expect as Ravens fans. But more than that, a very rested, rotational defensive line is another hallmark of Ravens defense. And the Monstars, Wolfe obviously out. Brandon Williams did not certainly play as well as he has in the past. Finished with a great game against Pittsburgh, I thought, in Week 18. By far his best game of the year, but had a lot of problems this year. And one that we haven't seen so far was tackling.
Yeah, the Brandon Williams signing long term is an interesting one to kind of take a look back at. And I think that's one of those ones that if it had happened 5 years earlier, it would have worked out really well in terms of a deal. But I think the league evolved enough during, or was already evolving when they signed him to the deal. Mm-hmm. And he kind of became an odd man out in terms of what kind of production and what you needed from a guy on the defensive line. And so throw that in on top of kind of aging and regression in terms of his skill set. And retrospectively, for a lot of people that didn't like the deal at the time when it was signed, turned out to be one that probably was not ideal.
Yeah, it's a big "I told you so" from those folks, I'm sure. You look at the Ravens' rush defense when he wasn't there, and you realize how important he was to this defense in terms of how many yards per game they gave up when he wasn't around. Incredibly, in his final game as a Raven, he led the Ravens in pressures for the game with three, which is really something that has been a constant bugaboo that he's not been a good generator of pressure.
Yeah, and it felt like at times, not just Williams, but kind of across the defensive line. I mean, without Wolfe, the Ravens still felt like they didn't have a guy that could generate pressure when they needed it. Madubuike, and we'll get into all these guys, was the guy I think that a lot of us were hoping could become that guy. Calais Campbell, I think we had hoped to see kind of more in terms of the pass rush skills. They weren't a bad group of guys, but pretty middling, I think, overall when you give a snapshot of what they contributed to the pass defense.
Yeah, I do think Calais has probably contributed more to the pass defense than you're giving him credit for. But with Williams, do you see any chance that he'll be back on any terms before we move on here?
I mean, it would have to be vet minimum, I think, or something in that vicinity. And if he's willing to play at that kind of role, I think there could be a place for him and be a guy that he's the last defensive lineman in the right games. He's inactive or the wrong games, he's inactive. In the right games, he gets a big role because it's a run heavy team and that's a good fit. But it'd be interesting to see if there's a market out there for that kind of player, because I think that there probably isn't. So maybe we do ultimately see him back on a pretty cheap deal.
Right. I don't see this as a vet min deal, but you never know. DaCosta's a crafty one, and he may say, you know, hey, establish your market. If you want to play, we got a spot for you. I think he'll make Jimmy Smith kind of money, like $3 million or incentive laden, where it might be up to $4 million, depending on snaps or that sort of thing. I don't think it will be a pure vet min deal in the case of Williams. And if I were him, I'd probably consider retiring if I had to take a lot less money. Really, the first thing I consider is how much I love the game still, you know, playing it, being in the locker room, all that. There was a time when, you know, he got to ride out on the cart with Suggs, and that was a really big deal to him, or it seemed to be at camp. I'm not sure how much he just loves it as opposed to the natural balancing act you're playing with. How much is the grind impacting your body? How much is it, how difficult is it to rehab from injuries? You know, how much pain do you go into the off season with? And do you really want to carry this around for the rest of your life? And I think there's some legitimate questions that Brandon Williams got to answer with the relative salary being what it likely would be.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, the last couple of years, he's been a little banged up. You know, he's missed some games here and there. We haven't, I think it's been at least 2 years, if not three, or the last two seasons, he has not played a full season. It's been a while since we've seen 16 games from him. And like you mentioned, you know, when he was going out in the earlier part of that, it was a huge negative impact to the Ravens' run defense. It seemed like less so, you know, in terms of what that impact ended up being down the road.
Right. I mean, Brandon Williams has been tremendously durable for his career. He's played since 2013. He only played seven games, and they hadn't quite fit him into the defense completely then. But then 14, 16, 16, 16, 12, 16, 14, 13, 13. From a defensive lineman, can't argue with that durability in any way, shape, or form, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree. And you know, it just seems like the injuries have been catching up with him more. And sure, relative to whether or not that plays a role in him retiring, and especially for these big guys, right? Like, you have to assume that, you know, just like you see with these offensive linemen, when Yonder retired, I mean, he was a different human being within 3 months of retiring from the Ravens. And so you probably imagine something similar would happen with Brandon Williams.
Yeah, I'd expect he'd lose some weight. I don't expect him to be the same type as Michael McCrary and some of these other guys. I think he has a natural kind of a larger build to him, but we'll see how that works out. You know, one of the things reason why the Ravens have to consider it is they really don't have any nose tackles for next year, at least in the book. The other guy who played a little nose this year, I think, is probably done, Justin Ellis. Part of the general trend of the Ravens that they have a lot of 30-plus linemen now, and it's a position last draft that they really needed to rebuild. And I thought this is a great chance to get Christian Barmore. He was one of the guys I liked for the first round. They didn't do that, and they also didn't draft any defensive linemen. You know, again, he's one of – not taking Chris Tonga or some of the other guys who were available in round seven was something that really kind of bothered me about the Ravens not even taking any step to rebuild the defensive line, but they probably didn't have as high a grade on him. And they liked Ben Mason better, or they, you know, the powers that be decided he was the guy. And they're going to have to take steps this year with the draft. I think they'll probably have to expend two picks on the line and probably also have one free agent to patch their way through. And then next year have another pick on that defensive line as well.
Yeah, it does seem like the Ravens, I mean, for a team that seemed to that does have a long history of really developing, you know, some rising stars on the defensive line, or at least guys that can plug in, you know, the Michael Pierces, even Brandon Williams, you know, undervalued or, you know, lower in terms of their draft picks. We haven't seen some of those guys kind of really come up. You know, I was taking a look through PFF's grades before we hopped onto this podcast, and there he is sitting at number four overall for interior defensive lineman is Zach Seiler. And that one still kind of sticks in my craw because he was a guy that popped a lot in the preseason for the Ravens.
Oh yeah.
And you know, really could have, you know, I didn't even understand when he was a guy that wasn't getting on the roster, just because it's felt like the Ravens haven't had a lot of defensive line depth for a few years now. And so, you know, obviously a successful year for him, at least according to Pro Football Focus.
Right, he's a prototypical five tech in terms of his size, and you know, when a guy like that can play three and five like Wolf can, or like Campbell can play anywhere, but like Wolf can or Campbell can, you really have something, because the five tech position in a lot of ways is going away. The three tech position is where the Ravens have a little bit more talent. They're obviously kind of stockpiled with having Justin Matabike there as a guy they still hope is an ascending player. I don't think they got completely the ascension they wanted him out of this year. I think that'd be fair to say is they got, you know, probably 60% of the ascension that you'd hope for in terms of a second year player.
Yeah, I wonder if Matabike is scheme restrained on this team, you know, because there are probably 8 to 10 plays a game where you see him do something and you're like, wow, that's really impressive. And a lot of cases it's been in the run game where he's crossing the face of his, you know, the guy that's trying to block him. He's just, you know, absolutely just demolishing and throwing guys aside in some of those instances, you know, bullying guys way into the backfield and just blowing plays up just by kind of like in terms of the spacing. And we regularly see those splash plays, but then in the pass rush moments where you would expect those skills to translate over, right? Like some of those same things to come to fruition, those things go away. And so they don't go away, but we haven't seen as much that, you know, you haven't seen what you thought you might get from him. And so, you know, he's a little undersized. I wonder, you know, whether or not some of that has to do with kind of durability for him or kind of endurance or anything in that regard. But, you know, I hope he's ascending too. I think a lot of people expected more this year.
Yeah, I do too. There's so much to unpack with what you've just talked about here, but there's a couple things about Matabike. First of all, he's not really playing many of the pure pass downs, so we wouldn't see as much of him as a rusher. And, you know, obviously when you're on an earlier down, so you have to be more careful about playing the run, playing the pass, and knowing what your assignment is and whatnot. Not to say that doesn't exist on third down as well, but he's also a pure three tech, and he wants to play on the outside shoulder of that guard and beat that guard one-on-one. When he gets into double team situations, which can happen on earlier downs, of course, that's not as good a situation for him. Then his undersized nature really, I think, comes into play. And the Ravens have him and Broderick Washington, both of whom are similar type players in the sense that they're size-wise, they're similar. Broderick Washington, not nearly as quick, but a disruptive guy nonetheless, and a guy you'd want to play at a three tech if you could. Too small to play nose. And right there, that's a pretty big limitation in rebuilding the line to have those two guys there who are really pure three techs. And a lot of the really great linemen you can go out and get in the draft are three techs in college because they want to get that one-on-one matchup versus the guard. And you've seen them there. You know, obviously you're dealing with a bigger size and shape pool at the three tech spot. Because you really only have to be about 300 pounds and, you know, 6'2 to 6'4 and that range is all fine. It's a big size and shape pool there. It's a much more constrained size and shape pool when you're talking about five tech or when you're talking about nose tackle. And those are the areas where the Ravens are going to really need to rebuild. They need two nose tackles and they are available. I mean, every team in college has them, but it becomes a more challenging rebuild time.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw it with, you know, you mentioned Ellis earlier, and, you know, we've seen the Ravens fill the nose tackle spot in a pinch with guys that, you know, and again, this kind of goes to scheme. You just need the right guy that kind of fits into how the Ravens use that nose tackle and is capable of doing those things. And generally speaking, you're going to get kind of average production, I think, out of that guy for what you're asking from him, because you're not, you know, asking them to do a ton, right? Like Brandon Williams, I think, is asked to do more out of that role, or was asked to do more out of that role, which is why it was so effective to have him as the nose tackle against the run game. But I think they can go out and fill those spots. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Ravens, you know, stay more to the true kind of 3-4 nature and continue to kind of get smaller and figure out ways to get some of these guys on the field together, you know, and we can talk about, we'll probably talk a little bit about Calais Campbell in more depth and whether or not the Ravens think he's a guy that comes back, but like, do you need a nose tackle? And, you know, in terms of scheme and approach, you know, is that something that they're going to continue to lean on? Yeah, you need big bodies for big situations and, you know, you're going to have some of them on the roster. But is it going to be as high of a priority? And are the Ravens going to try and change the way they try and get those guys on the field? I would gladly trade being 10th against the run in the league for 10 spots of ranking against the pass, if that meant, especially it meant from pressure or sacks or things that were being created for the defensive line. It's an easy trade-off for me. It seems like the Ravens have not been willing to do that. They continue to keep this historical approach of we're going to stop the run and then, you know, try and situationally make a couple big stops on third down when we have to.
They play in a division where you have a couple of teams that have traditionally liked to run. The Steelers, who you know, obviously would probably prefer to run, but in recent years with Roethlisberger eroding, should have had to lean on it more. Their offensive line didn't really allow for it. But the Cleveland Browns, obviously a team that runs, and you know, from divisional perspective, if you've got teams in your division that like to run out of 11, I don't think you can play without the really big-bodied nose, because that guy gets double-teamed every single run play if they're running out of 11 and the field is spread. So I think you need more than that. I think you do need you need to have a nose tackle you can lean on and probably to play a significant number of snaps, because you're going to have him on most first and second downs. And then once you have one, you need to be able to rotate. You need to be able to have depth, all the things. So Ellis, where he really broke down with the Ravens was when they leaned on him. I thought he's a pretty good player when they were just asking him to rotate for maybe a third of the total snaps that you would have a nose tackle on the field. The position that's going away is the five tech. And that's where, you know, you don't play base defense very often in the NFL. Few teams against you have to do it. And the Browns happen to be one of them, where they don't want to put you in those 11 as often. They want to get big, play big with six offensive linemen. They want to do it with three tight ends. You know, in those cases, you really need to still have three defensive linemen who are large. In other cases, like the Bengals are really more of a committed 11 team where Joe Mixon would prefer to run against 11 and get an extra heavy of yours out of the box.
Yeah, that's it'll be interesting to see. I think the Ravens, and this is more a broader comment on the defense, you know, it's hard to evaluate the final results of what we saw from the defense this year, obviously because of injuries, but even early on, I mean, there weren't that many injuries early, you know, before Elliott went down, before Humphrey went down, you know, pre-Josh Bynes being added back in the mix.
Derek Wolfe.
Other than Marcus Peters being out, you know, and Derek Wolfe being out, you're a relatively healthy defense. And they weren't great to start it wasn't like they were gangbusters to start the year and then it just eroded because of injuries. They weren't great to begin with. So I'm interested. It'll be intriguing to see if the Ravens take a different approach to scheme at all, how they think about that, or whether they just kind of keep rowing the boat the same way they have been. I don't have an opinion one way or the other, quite frankly.
I mean, if the injuries did start right away in week one with Westry got hurt against Las Vegas in one of the last plays of the game, I think it might've been on the touchdown catch.
Yeah, I think it was.
And did Averett go out in that? No, Averett was the last man standing for most of the season.
So yeah, he made the pick after we left.
yes, exactly. So, by the way, in that game, guys, Jordan and I, you know, met before the game. We got to shoot craps, which is always fun. But we sat in different places in the stadium. Then we left the game, and each of us left on what appeared to be that first touchdown. We actually waved hi to each other outside the stadium, crossing, going different directions. Then I walk across that bridge to go back to Mandalay Bay or wherever it is. And all of a sudden, there's this weird post-apocalyptic look where people looking back at the stadium. And, you know, it's like, is there a fight? Is there a fire over there? What's going on here? And they said, no, the game's not over. You know, look over there. You could see into the stadium out of the Jumbotron. That's where we ended up watching the end of the game from.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. It was pretty surreal. Wild. But, surreal. You know, like the Westry injury was late in that game. I guess Jimmy Smith was, I think Jimmy, did Jimmy Smith play in that game? Or he was banged up early. So he might have been, I can't remember. It's so long ago now. But yes. Either way, I think the defense was intact enough and wasn't successful to the degree of what I would have wanted to see even early in the season, you know, and that was pretty disappointing. And so, you know, is that personnel? What are the questions the Ravens need to ask on that? I'm interested to kind of see what DaCosta's approach to that is in balance of both the draft and free agency.
Right. I mean, to me, in terms of the pass defense, the people that were being picked on consistently early in the season, the LJ Ford injury ended up being pretty severe for the Ravens because that meant that Queen was on the field more and he got picked on like crazy. Board got picked on like crazy. And Harrison was on the field early in the season, which was a lot. He played about 170 snaps, I think, in those first five, 6 weeks. He got picked on a lot. You end up, you know, that inside linebacker core was so weak that I think it weakened the rest of the shell too, in terms of what the safeties had to be responsible for, and you know how they had to make up for what those linebackers were missing in there early on. It goes back to the old thing that they will find that guy if you have a weak pass defender anywhere, zone, man, whatever you're doing. If you put a weak player out there, Patrick Queen is probably the example we picked on most, but you know, it's not like any of the inside linebackers were good in coverage this year. That's where they'll find that. I think probably if I had to say how they're going to pick up ground of the type you're talking about, Jordan, it would have to be from being a committed quarter team. So they're going to have to get those inside linebackers off the field entirely on third down, four safeties, three corners, and a four-man pass rush. And I think if they did that, I think we could really see some cool things.
Yeah. And I think you are, if I recall, yeah, both Geno Stone fans. Yes. Saw the interception from him in the Pittsburgh game. I think he's held the free safety position really well. I think he's an instinctual guy. I know we're talking about defensive line here, but yeah. I hope he's a guy. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any reason that he won't get a crack at Elliott's role, and that we're going to see him be a lot more in the defense next year.
Right. It's a real question, because now, one question was, is there a market for Elliott? Could the Ravens possibly afford Elliott? Now I'm wondering, is there a spot for Elliott? I mean, I think the Ravens would probably like him back, but durability being the question it's been, you know, it may be a matter that they get priced out of the market. You know, if we're talking 2 years, $4 million, sure. Sign me up for that right now. If we're talking 2 years, $8 million, I don't know. I think I might need to move on at that price. And he may have offers that are, you know, in that neighborhood, but I think the Ravens give him basically tell him to go find what the market is and then come back to them, and they may make him an offer at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Ravens just need to move to having a true free safety. The Ravens haven't had, since they moved on from Thomas, haven't had a real free safety.
Right.
And I think they've struggled because of it at times.
Yeah, so they had Thomas, and he did things that you couldn't see, but they had Eric Weddle, who was effective for a couple of his 3 years in Baltimore, and then they had obviously Reed forever, and in between there they had a lot of Brad Woodson too. Boy, it's been a great run of free safeties here in Baltimore. Eric Turner. Anyway, the Calais Campbell, we really didn't, I think, finish on. Calais Campbell ended the year, I believe, with still zero sacks for the year. And I didn't really look at that. It's amazing that I don't really know it, but it's one of those things that he's doing a lot of things effectively without getting sacks, including getting pressure. At some point, you have to finish on some of your things. Actually, I think I see him for 1.5 sacks here this year. He had one against Pittsburgh, and he had a half a sack against Cincinnati. So looks like he didn't get shut out for the year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your sentiment that the Ravens and their outside linebackers do the same thing. I mean, I can't count the number of times it feels like they had the quarterback by an arm and then just over pursued and just missed him. Where if they would have just kind of conceded to the contain and use the pressure to get to the quarterback instead of looking for kind of like the big takedown hit, I think they would have had another 6 to 8 sacks on the year, and some in some big moments too. And so the Ravens have got, and that's the thing that I think they've got to figure out. How are they generating pressure with 4 and 5 man rushes that aren't exotic? And if they can't get that figured out, I think long-term that's going to be a big problem for this defense. You know, the last time the moments that we've seen this defense in recent history be really effective is when they can get a 4-man pass rush, and it's a natural. I mean, obviously, any defense is going to be better when they have a natural 4-man pass rush. But I think they rely a little too heavily on Wink's creativity, and that's not to take away from it. I actually think it's really valuable. But at some, in some ways, you've got to be able to stay in some form of base for some period of time and be successful from time to time in the NFL, I think.
Well, it will make the pass, the back end will have an easier time if they're not, diving off the A gap to get to their coverage assignment. I mean, that's been a regular ongoing problem. But, that flexibility is very valuable, and it's going to be gone at the beginning of next year is my fear. I mean, Owe and Hayes will go into next year as the Sam linebacker. So one of them is going to have to take the role. It's probably Hayes. if you play him a lot of snaps, you have no idea if he's going to be good or not. I mean, he's a second-year player who's never stepped on the field in terms of a meaningful game. I think that's true. Did he have a snap or two in the first game of the year or something? I don't remember, actually. But he's basically never played a meaningful snap. And he's going to be the guy they look to. And the other guy they can look to is Oweh, who certainly has all the physical tools to play the Sam linebacker spot. I think he could be a great coverage player. But you probably want him spending this offseason trying to refine pass rush moves more than anything else. I mean, I'd want him working with a positional expert to get those elements down because he seemed to take such a big step forward in a lot of ways this year.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with all that.
Defensive line. Let's get back to it. So is there anybody we haven't discussed on the group? We talked about Broderick. Okay, practice squad guys.
A quick note about Broderick Washington. I was rather impressed with him more than a couple times this year. He was a guy that I thought when the year started may not make the roster. And when it was all said and done, it wasn't splashy and he wasn't asked to do a lot. And in a lot of instances, he was kind of the first guy off the bench to fill in. But he had more than a couple splash plays. And that's nice progress from him. And it'll be interesting. He's an interesting guy to keep an eye on for next year. Because he also had some weird offseason stuff going on, too, before they even got into the season.
Yeah, he was a guy whose play in 2020 did not tell me for sure he'd even be on the team. And then he changed that narrative during the 2021 season to be he's got a spot for 2022 for sure with the Ravens, you know, shortcomings and his ability to, play at a higher level. I think he's certainly not his spot is in any danger. There's two other guys on the Ravens who both are very interesting. Khalil McKenzie came in, played a little bit of nose tackle. He has that designation of being a guard that the Ravens may try and push the envelope on. I keep trying to call him a guard for next year so they get an eighth offensive lineman on the field who can help them on defense. And it's, you know, it's if they can do that, if they can get away with it, they'd be fools not to. So we'll see how that works out. Anything about McKenzie before I move on to my next guy?
No, I think it is what he is what he is kind of thing.
The other guy is Isaiah Mack, and he looked really good in that last game against Cincinnati. He had parts of three sacks. He had an actual sack. He had a sack that was taken away by penalty, which was unfortunate, but that's what happens. And then he had another one where he got the initial pressure on Broderick Washington's sack. So definitely a player who showed some punch. Here's the issue. Isaiah Mack is listed as a nose tackle. He is way too small to play nose tackle in the NFL, unless you're completely changing the rules for what nose tackle are. He's right around 300 pounds. He's a little bit short, too, even though he looks like he carries more weight than that. Honestly, he looks bigger than that on the field. I think maybe some of it is height, that he really isn't all that heavy. He uses leverage very well, I think, and to me, he looks like another three tech. He doesn't look like a nose. He looks like a freaking three, which it's not terrible. I mean, he seems to be a good player, but that's the one position the Ravens seem to have stocked already.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely saw him flash a little bit, and that that's great to see, and I'm on board. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the Ravens seem to have three guys of the same shape and body type, and so that begs the question: how are you going to make that work? You know, if you're Baltimore, and how are you going to layer all that in if he's the guy?
He can still help you in goal line and do some things. I mean, nobody's Michael Pierce. You'd like to have Michael Pierce and Brandon Williams in both A gaps in goal line defense or in short yardage defense. That really just provides your team something that you can't otherwise get. But, if you can't do that, you can string a bunch of 300 pounders across the line. And these guys are good leverage players. So, hopefully they can do what they need on plays like that. It is frustrating exactly where the Ravens have got themselves to in terms of not having any of the really big bodies anymore.
Yeah. And Aaron Crawford's a guy on the practice squad or IR, right? I don't know where he ended up being, but he flashed a little bit in training camp.
Yeah.
And was a guy that I know some people were a little concerned that he was placed on the practice squad was going to get picked up by another team.
Yes.
So, hopefully we see some progress from him. I mean, look, the Ravens, if anything, deserve the benefit of the doubt about being able to go out and find undrafted guys to fill the nose tackle and the big body roles in those instances, or use some of these late or like mid to late ish round picks and hit on them because they seem to have a good formula and a good approach. So, I have some level of trust that, you know, they'll draft maybe one or they'll draft the right number of guys and it might feel like it's too few for a lot of fans, and then use the undrafted to kind of fill in the gaps.
I you know, I'm okay with that. And maybe they've got their undrafted guys already lined up in terms of who they expect to get. But if they draft no one, that would be the number that would really worry me. If they draft one guy, particularly if it's a premium pick, a, you know, 1-2 kind of guy, then I trust their judgment in terms of doing it. I'm much more concerned that they get two offensive tackles, in particular two guys who can play left tackle out of this draft.
Yeah, I think it's pretty unlikely we see a first or a second round defensive lineman. I'd be surprised by that.
Jordan Davis at 14.
I guess if he gets there, it's possible. But
I think there's actually a pretty good chance. I'm not sure he's taken in the top 12 or 13. We'll see. I mean, he's a humongous body, but there's a bunch of pass rushers. What there aren't this year is a bunch of good quarterbacks. And what typically happens in a draft season is the quarterbacks kind of got identified and they start shooting up the charts, and then there's trade focus and whatnot. A lot of teams need quarterbacks. Maybe a lot of teams are figuring they can get him in the second or third round, but you know, we want lots of quarterback buzz before draft day. That will help the Ravens, I think. A couple more things I want to say. Isaiah Mack is not a rookie. Okay. He's already played 2 years in the NFL prior this year. This is his third season. So he's actually an RFA this next season. So he's not a guy with a bunch of future value. He's a guy that the Ravens will have to decide on immediately. Do we want to try and sign this guy for 2 years, say right now? And I think it would make a lot of sense to do that. They're not going to want to tender him, but they might want to sign him for, or maybe they will tender him. And because the tender is non-guaranteed and they can cut him, they just say, okay, look, we can pay you $1.2 million or we can let you walk, but we can't pay you the $3.5 million we offered you.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the Ravens are going to have, at least from my last look, I think the Ravens are going to have plenty of roster flexibility for next season. They've got a lot of guys that are coming off the roster. So a lot of holes to fill, but then I think that they'll set up just like you said, which is like leaving themselves some flexibility, getting guys in that are, you know, in some non-guaranteed format that they can move on from, or if they pop, the guys that ultimately make the roster.
Jordan, always a pleasure to talk football. Is there anything we missed on the defensive line here that we should, anybody we should be talking about? Wolf's return, what percentage chance would you give for that?
What is there cap? Is there even cap savings? If
200,000, so basically no, because the guy they would pick up would cost more than that. But if Wolf can't play, they'll take the 200,000 in cap savings and, you know, apply that towards a player who can.
I had heard from someone that he was relatively close. It was just like a pain tolerance issue. It seemed like the Ravens had a lot of that this year, actually, where guys were close or kind of capable of playing. But, you know, what were the ramifications of kind of taking that extra shot and pushing through all of that? And those guys didn't play. So I don't know. I think it's better than 60% chance that Wolf plays 8 games next year.
Okay. I mean, hey, I'll take that right now, certainly, if we're rolling dice for it. But anyway, that's a reasonable guy to take a chance on. With the cap savings involved, they'd be foolish not to. Right. And I think also just bring him to camp and having him lead from there would be of value as well. And, you know, hopefully, who knows if the Ravens will have Justin Houston next year. Obviously, I think they'll probably try and retain him in some capacity. But we saw what he did for the defensive line and or for the outside linebacker group and how nice that was. George, it's always a pleasure to talk football with you, and we always seem to run over by a little bit. Not bad today. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Yeah, I'm at Raven Sit Room on Twitter and at Film Study Baltimore. You guys can check us out. My co-host Gabe Ferguson and I, he's at Gabe Fergie, run a podcast over there. So we'd love to have you in, talk a little bit about games and try and break down some of the important plays that happen each week.
All right. Outstanding. Folks out there, if you're looking to get on a podcast with me, I'd love to have you. This offseason, going to have lots of open mic kind of time. If you're passionate about something on the Ravens, think of this as your favorite call-in show. You will be vetted, but think about this as your favorite call-in show where we can talk about something. And I'm looking for people just who have an interesting point to make. The narrower, the better, so we can go deep in about 25 minutes. Love to talk football with you. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.